Thank you very much, Lynn. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening with Regina Dawn Akers, I guess. This is my journal that I'm sharing during this period of time. And I've been sharing the 7 steps here for quite a while. I think I began sharing the 7 steps in 2012, and this is 2016, so this has been going on for quite a while. Tonight we're going to begin with quote 724, and so I am posting the link to 724 in the room. There you are. And I typically start with a song just to kind of get centered. I was listening to Chris, so I'm not prepared. I don't have a song, but hold on, I'll get one quickly. Let's see what we got here. Let's see. Nothing's really jumping out at me. Oh, here's one. This is what I would call an oldie but a goodie. This is one of the songs that really captured my attention in 2004, I believe. Yeah, 2004, which was my very first year consciously on the spiritual path. And I used to listen to this song over and over and over again. And for many, many, many years, I claimed this song as my favorite song. This is by Scott Grace. Back then he was Scott Klickstein or Klickstein. I'm not sure which way. And the name of the song is You Guide Me.
Like a stream in the desert, like a path.
after all those years. All right, so we are going to begin then with the seven steps to awakening, beginning with quote 724, and this is the quote: "Ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. Ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions." And one thing that's kind of interesting about that quote is that probably most people in the world, in fact, I can probably take probably out of the sentence, I can just say that most people in the world would think that a really strong mind is wisdom or smart. We might use the word smart. A really strong mind is smart. They would think a very weak mind, certainly no mind at all, would be ignorance. And this is really defining ignorance in exactly the opposite way. A really strong mind would be really strong ignorance. And it takes no mind at all to have true wisdom. True wisdom, of course, being knowing your true self. So let's look at my journal entry from April 2nd, 2013. Ignorance is believing that mind is wisdom. Ignorance is also believing that mind's experiences are reality or truth. Wisdom comes when mind is quiet. One can know wisdom by deciding at the mental level, I do not know. And I guess the only thing I really feel like saying about this is that we all trust our minds far too much. We all trust our minds far too much. And we trust our perceptions, which of course are a part of the mind. We trust our perceptions far too much. We trust our point of view far too much. We trust our opinions far too much. And this is why we are ignorant. When I look to find out how many people are on the planet Earth today, depending on, you know, where I look, I find different numbers. But the numbers are usually somewhere between 6.5 billion and 7.5 billion. So right now I'll just go with the middle, 7 billion. So let's say there are 7 billion people on the planet Earth right now. Each and every one of us, when we believe our minds, has a completely unique point of view. There is no other person on earth that has exactly the same point of view that I have. Certainly I can find people who maybe agree with me on this topic, people who agree with me on this topic, people who agree with me on this topic. But there's no one else on the planet Earth who has exactly my point of view about all things. And that's true for each of us. Each of us has a completely unique, completely individual point of view when we believe the mind. And the interesting thing is that we all think that we're right. How can 7 billion people, when no two of them agree completely, all be right? They can't be. And this is what I mean when I say we trust our point of view, we trust our perceptions, we trust our opinions far too much. We think we are right. when actually our way of looking at things is only one out of 7 billion. Think about how tiny and how minuscule and how meaningless and how unimportant one out of 7 billion is. Let's see, one out of, there's 7,000, wait, let me put the commas in, it'll make it a little easier. There's 7,000, 7 million, 7 billion. There we go. One out of 7 billion. How important or right or meaningful can that point of view be? Right? So if we could start to question our way of thinking, question, why do I think I'm so right about this? Am I so right about this? Is it possible that I'm wrong about this? Michael Langford in his book, Manonasa, talks about how at, I think it was age 7, a question spontaneously arose for him. And that question was, is it true? And that whenever his mind would think something, can imagine this, starting at age 7, he would question, is it true? And then the mind might answer with something else, and he'd question that. Is that true? And the mind might answer with something else, and he'd question that. Well, is that true, right? And he says that through this inquiry that began at age 7, he did not believe near as many concepts as most individuals grow up believing, because he began to question them at a very, very young age. So he was freer from conceptual entrapment than most of us are. But in hearing that story, most of us can look at ourselves and say, you know what? I didn't do that. I haven't been doing that. When I think something, I just believe it. I think my political opinions are correct. I think my spiritual opinions are correct. I think my ideas about what's good and bad are correct. What's right and wrong are correct. what's desirable and not desirable, fun and not fun, etc., etc., etc. But what this quote is telling us, it says, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And of course, everything that we're discussing here, having ideas and believing them, that is mind. And then we're talking about there are thousands upon thousands, probably even millions of ideas in our mind that we believe without ever questioning them. Which means we have a very strong functioning mind, which means we must also be very ignorant. And this, of course, isn't meant to insult anyone, although, you know, the ego can take it as insulting, and we all know that. It isn't meant to insult anyone, but it is meant to help make a point for all of us. And that point is that we trust our way of thinking far too much. And we don't question our way of thinking nearly enough. And if we want to be free of ignorance and have true wisdom, we need to begin that questioning process. We need to begin to question ourselves as much as we can. Hundreds of times every day if we're capable of that. But if not, at least a dozen times a day, right? At least when we notice, for example, that we're watching the news and we're forming an opinion as we watch, oops, stop and question. How do I know that is true? Do I know that is true? Right? And when we're in a conversation with someone, we notice a point of view forming, stop. Do I know that is true? Right? And just begin to really question our own thinking so that we can begin to undo that thinking so that the mind, instead of becoming stronger, will become weaker. And this is how we move out of ignorance into wisdom. So exactly opposite of what the world teaches, but that's not a surprise for us. We already know that the world's thinking is the opposite of truth. The question really for us to ask ourselves is, how focused am I in practicing that? This morning, Gloria read to us from NTI Matthew chapter 7. And there's a verse in NTI Matthew chapter 7 that says something like to hear, to listen, but not to practice is not to have heard. So to say, oh yeah, I get it. The mind is ignorance. The mind is ignorance. And dang it, you know, here's my political point of view and I'm sure I'm right. You see, that's just not really to have heard. So again, the quote is, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And the journal entry says, ignorance is believing that the mind is wisdom. Ignorance is also believing that the mind's experiences are reality or truth. Wisdom comes when the mind is quiet. One can know wisdom by deciding at the mental level, I do not know. And I think I'm going to move on. I could stay on 724 longer, but I don't think I will. I think I will move on. So let's go on to 725. Maybe the points that I would have made if I'd stayed on 724 longer are going to get made anyway, because I could see other things to say, but I felt to move on. So 725 and the seven steps to awakening. There is no mind in the liberated ones. There is no mind in the liberated ones. Again, this is exactly the opposite of how the world thinks. The world would think a very wise, enlightened person had a very strong mind. People who are not familiar with the actual process of letting go of the ego and awakening to the true self, they would probably think that an enlightened person had a very strong mind. And this is saying that an enlightened person has no mind. No mind. What does that mean? You know, it's interesting because this is a place where we could all, if I opened up the floor, I'm not going to, but if I opened up the floor and said, tell me what you think no mind means. Oh, and by the way, do you think it's true that an enlightened person has no mind? I think we could probably find a number of opinions on that among us. We'd have different opinions about what no mind means, and we'd have different opinions about whether it's true or not that the enlightened person has no mind, or is there still some mind, right? And that's an example of how we use everything, including the spiritual path, to continue to think that I am right, I am smart, and most of all, I am me. I am me. There's something else in NTI. It's in NTI Luke. and I can't quote it exactly, and I won't take the time to look for it, but basically what it's asking us to do is to look at all of our expectations about what enlightenment or awakening is. Look at every one of our expectations. Imagine that you are writing a list. Well, I think enlightenment or awakening is this, and I think enlightenment or awakening is this, and writing it all down. And then NTI tells us that we are wrong about all of that. Whatever we would imagine when we still believe the mind, whatever we would imagine awakening to be, we're wrong. And that's why we could say, no mind, and do you think it's true that the enlightened person has no mind? That's why we would experience a variety of opinions, because we don't know, and we're making it up, and we're believing what we make up. That's what the variety of opinions represents. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. In the last few days of March, I read Michael Langford's book, Manonessa, which means mind death, or it's sometimes translated as mind annihilation. And he has, I think he said it's 44 pages of that book, tries to explain to the human what Manonessa is, right? What Manonessa is. And I read those 44 pages in late March, the last few days of March. And it was quite interesting, because when I read those 44 pages in the book Manonessa, also the chapter Manonessa, my experience was there's nothing there that I want. The I in this sentence is a person, a human. There's just nothing there that I want. And in fact, what I experienced after that was just this deflate. The best way to just describe it is feeling deflated. Like, you know, why am I wasting all of my time on the spiritual path? There's nothing in there that I want. And what have I been doing? And, you know, very deflated. And the way I remember it, that was for about the next 4 hours, because the next 4 hours is what was left in the day, and then I went to sleep, right? So this deflated feeling, what am I doing on a spiritual path, lasted for about 4 hours. But when I woke up the next morning, I guess a miracle had occurred, what we would call a miracle. Because I no longer felt that I had any idea what awakening or enlightenment was. I mean, I think up until that point, I still had some ideas. I had let go of others, but I still had some ideas. And I still, of course, like everyone else, thought I was right. But when I woke up the next morning, there was nothing left. The only thing that I could say, honestly, is I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what no mind is. I have no idea what Manonessa is. I have no idea what awakening is. I have no idea what enlightenment is. I mean, that's the only honest statement I could make. I have no idea. And what was amazing was the desire for it. And I don't think I even want to use the word desire, because people have different ideas about what that word means. So I'm going to call it the commitment, the dedication to that purpose of mind death was greater than it ever had been. And that's something I can't quite explain to people. You know, how do you go from thinking you know what it is and thinking you want it to realizing, oh my gosh, there's nothing in there that I, the person, wants, to realizing you have no idea what it is, and then suddenly your commitment is greater. That's why I call it a miracle. But if I was to give an explanation to someone who you know, doesn't want to just believe in miracles and wants an explanation, if I was to give an explanation to someone about how that miracle occurred, I would have to say a little bit more of my mind died, and therefore the calling to awaken was more clearly felt. You see, when I was holding to ideas about what enlightenment is, about what awakening is, about what it does and does not look like, that is strong mind. And what is strong mind? Ignorance. And what does ignorance do? It blocks truth. It blocks wisdom. So somehow in this experience of, oh my gosh, there's nothing there that I want, nothing in Michael's description that I want, I being the person, this was the beginning of a surrender of some type, right? The ego is saying, my God, there's nothing there that I want. That's the beginning of some kind of a crack. And then, you know, whatever crack was created while I was sleeping, I guess, it burst. It burst, and a part of the mind died. And so then I woke up with a new, unexplainable commitment. That hasn't died to this day, and in fact, continues to strengthen. That's how I know it wasn't a mood. Moods die pretty quickly, right? But this hasn't passed. It was a shift into a newer level of commitment that continues and continues to strengthen. So the point here again is ignorance comes from the mind. And wisdom comes from no mind, no mind obstruction, no mind blocking it. And we can even see that as we let go of what you could call part of mind, which would be a way of thinking, a part of your thought system, or a belief, a part of your thought system. Even as you let go of a part of your mind, a part of your thought system, you experience results or miracles, as we call them. Changes in your way of being, your way of seeing, your way of perceiving. And this wisdom that is shining through, that mind is shining through because some parts of the mind were undone. And so you can imagine as you start to allow this undoing to happen and as some parts of your mind die, you can imagine that if there were no mind, there would only be enlightenment. Because you are already begin to experience these shifts in the way you see, in the way you think, in the way you experience, by even letting go of some mind. And again, our ideas about what no mind means, our ideas about what awakening or enlightenment means are a part of our conceptual thought system. So they need to be let go, just like the rest of the conceptual thought system needs to be let go. So again, we're looking at 725. There is no mind in the liberated ones. And a really good thing for us to say if we still have mind is, I don't know what the hell that means, because that's the truth, right? I don't know what that means. But as I contemplated it, the clarity that was just discussed became clear that as there's less mind, there's more clarity. Therefore, it makes sense that if there is no mind, there is absolute clarity. I could already see that from my own experience. And I can also see from my own experience that when I do believe the mind and when I do get caught up in my own way of thinking, I can see that I fall into ignorance for that period of time. And one way to see that is by having the contrast. By having the contrast of when I'm not attached to the mind and I'm not believing the mind and pieces of the mind have already died. And so there's this clarity, this wisdom, and seeing what that feels like and what that looks like and recognizing the truth of that. And then believing an idea, going fully back into identification with mind, and feeling the ignorance of that. You can literally feel the ignorance. You can feel the ignorance of thinking you're right. At some point you can. At some point you become so discerning that you can feel the ignorance of thinking you're right. And then you have the contrast of when you weren't identified so much with the mind and when you were identified so much with the mind, and you can see which one is ignorance and which one is wisdom. And so again, even though you don't really know for sure what no mind means, you do know from your own experience that the less mind there is, the more wisdom and clarity there is. The more mind there is, the more ignorance there is. Therefore, it begins to make great sense that no mind means total enlightenment or total clarity or total wisdom. So as 725 says in my journal, consistent enlightenment is no mind consistently because mind blocks enlightenment. And if we go back and look at quote 724, we can see how well this fits with that quote. 724 said, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And that's because mind blocks enlightenment. Ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And then quote 725, there is no mind in the liberated ones. And again, that is because mind blocks enlightenment. And then again, you know, if we're really sincere seekers, and I do think we are, when I scan the room and I look at who's here, you know, I know many of you, I know that we are sincere seekers. So we want to take this back to ourself, and we want to begin to ask, how much do I still believe I'm right about my point of view, my opinions, what's good and bad, etc., etc., etc.? How much do I question my own thinking? If we accept the premise that mind blocks enlightenment, then, and if we want enlightenment, awakening, manonasa, even though we may not know what it is, but we're feeling that call, if we want that, and we accept that mind is the obstacle to that, then we must commit ourselves to letting go of believing our own mind. We must commit ourselves to questioning our mind. How do I know that thought is true? Do I know that thought is true? And maybe it's even helpful to have the humility of remembering that my point of view, my unique individual thought system, is only one in 7 million. How right can it be? How right can it be? Why do I trust it so much? So let's move on to 726. In the Seven Steps to Awakening does continue this theme. Renunciation of the mind is total renunciation. Renunciation of the mind is total renunciation. I'm going to, I think, jump ahead in my Seven Steps journal. I'll find the link and give it to you all. This is something that I contemplated this week. Yeah, it's 829E. So let me give you 829E. And we'll look at this. And then we'll come back to 726. So there's a link to 829E from June 28th, 2016. So just in the last week. And the reason I'm coming to 829E is because I was contemplating renunciation this week. And this quote is about renunciation. Renunciation of the mind is total renunciation, is what 726 says. Well, listen to my journal entry from 829E. Renunciation is not the act of letting go of attachment by a person, the renunciate. Renunciation is noticing where all things arise. Even the person is within this presence. Renunciation is keeping attention with the truth of what I am and not being distracted by what I am not. To see myself as the renunciate is a distraction. It is attention focused on thing instead of non-thing. To whom does renunciation appear? To whom does attachment appear? Focusing attention on that is true renunciation. So this quote, 726, the one that we're actually contemplating, says, renunciation of the mind is total renunciation. Well, how does one renunciate the mind? Well, I brought you to 829E because I think it answers that question. If, let's say, the mind is saying, I got to renunciate the mind. I've got to renunciate the mind. I've got to let go of this mind. And this is the mind saying this. And by the way, earlier in this week, I did experience a mental struggle that can only be called the mind trying to let go of mind, which is an impossible thing, but we all go through it. But earlier in the week, I experienced that mental struggle of the mind trying to let go of the mind, and I was able to see the absolute folly of that. I was able to see it was like the story trying to let go of the story, and it couldn't be done. But I was able to see that I, the one who was watching this mental struggle, was this quiet, empty presence that the mind was actually within. And, you know, maybe a good example in order to, just to give someone a visual, is imagine that I am a crystal ball. And inside of the crystal ball, there's a cartoon character called Mind, who is kind of struggling with himself. He's pulling on his own legs and pulling on his own arms, trying to get rid of himself. Right? So we have Mind struggling with Mind, this little cartoon character. The cartoon character is inside of the crystal ball. And I saw myself as the crystal ball. So I was not the one struggling to let go of Mind. And in fact, Mind was in me. It was something that I could observe, like you would observe a cartoon character, but I did not see it as me. Right? So this experience happened maybe a day before or 2 days before this journal entry. So I've had this experience of seeing clearly that I am not the mind. You could even say seeing clearly to a point that there's nothing to be let go of, because I am not the mind. And then something, as I was contemplating, quote, 829, and I don't remember what 829 says. Let me look ahead here. Let's see what 829 says. 829 also talks about renunciation. 829 says, internal renunciation and external renunciation. It is the dispassionate man who is capable of these. Okay, that's perfect. So think about the crystal ball and think about the cartoon character inside that's trying to let go of himself, and he's fighting his own arms and fighting his own legs, right, trying to let go of himself, okay? The crystal ball, the one inside that is fighting, trying to let go of himself, is very passionate in this fight. You know, I got to get rid of me, right? I got to get very passionate in this wrestling around with itself. But the crystal ball is very dispassionate. It's not involved in the struggle of letting go of mind, nor does it have to be. And I was seeing myself as this presence, which right now I'm going to refer to as the outer presence, although that's not really true, but for now I'll refer to it as the outer presence, which this struggle was happening at a cartoon level within. And so the internal renunciation and the external renunciation, it is the dispassionate man who is capable of these. I came to see that as meaning the one who can not be involved in the struggle, but see herself as the presence, or we'll call it right now the crystal ball, and maintain that awareness of herself as the crystal ball. That's the true renunciate, not the one that's in there fighting, trying to renunciate the mind. That's the cartoon character. The one who is already free of the mind and is able to see herself as that empty space. That's the renunciate. And so again, my journal entry for 829E this week, renunciation is not the act of letting go of attachment by a person, the renunciate, because that's the cartoon character. Instead, renunciation is noticing where all things arise. That would be the empty space that is me. Renunciation is not the act of letting go of attachment by a person, the renunciate. Renunciation is noticing where all things arise. Even the person is within this presence. Renunciation is keeping attention with the truth of what I am and not being distracted by what I am not. To see myself as the renunciate, as the one struggling to let go of the mind, to see myself as the renunciate is a distraction. It is attention focused on thing. Instead of non-thing, the presence is non-thing. To whom does renunciation appear? To whom does attachment appear? Because they both appear to the same one, to the same presence. That presence is the same whether there appears to be renunciation or whether there appears to be attachment. It's just that in renunciation it can be easier to see. But what is there that I am, whether renunciation is present or whether attachment is present. Focusing attention on that is true renunciation. Focusing attention on what I am, truly, that is renunciation. It's kind of a non-action. So if we go back to 726, so now I'm going back in my journal to 726, and I will reshare that link just in case you left with me and went all the way up to 829. Now again, this would have been a much longer time ago. This was in April of 2013, so the realizations I'm having this week I would not have had back then, right? So we'll see how I looked at this back then. But the quote is, renunciation of the mind is total renunciation. And this week's clarity is, that renunciation happens by focusing on what I am, not by trying to renunciate the mind, right? Just by being what I am. But let's see what I wrote in the journal back in 2013. So here we go, number 726. Actually, let me have a drink. All right, number 726. Sometimes I feel I must not want awakening enough because I continually wander into thought. Other times I feel to trust my heart, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. Which thought renounces the mind? That's a pretty good question. It might not be the clarity that I had this week, but that's a pretty good question. I call that pretty good clarity too. Yeah. So just listen to this very carefully. Which one of these concepts, they're both still mental concepts, but which one of these concepts is going to cause the mind to strengthen, to spin, to think some more? And which one of these concepts is going to help to weaken the mind or help us to lose interest in the mind or possibly even step away from the mind and notice ourselves as awareness? Listen to these two questions and see which one is which. Or these two concepts. They're both statements. The first statement. Sometimes I feel I must not want awakening enough because I continually wander into thought. Sometimes I feel I must not want awakening enough because I continually wander into thought. Or this question, or this statement. Other times, I feel to trust my heart, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. Other times, I feel to trust my heart, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. Could you hear which question is going to help you to let go of mind and which question is not, or which statement? They're both statements. I keep saying questions, but they're statements. I don't know about you, but when I listen to the thought or a thought like, sometimes I feel I must not want awakening enough because I continually wander into thought, more thoughts follow that thought if I listen to that thought. You know, I'm not good enough thoughts. Maybe I'll go on with a little bit of self-conversation about how I'm not good enough. I must not want this enough. I don't know who I'm fooling, me, myself, others, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, maybe I can do this. Let's see, how can I rearrange my schedule? Right, just all of these thoughts start coming. So that thought that I must not want awakening enough because I continually wander into thought is most likely going to lead to more thought, which means it's going to strengthen the mind. But listen to this thought. Other times, I feel to trust my heart, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. That can that's letting go of mind to at least some degree in this current moment. No thinking can follow that if I take those steps. No thinking can follow trusting my heart, staying in the moment and letting go of thinking now. So if I'm not ready to see that the renunciate, the person who is letting go of mind, is not truly what I am, then I can be ready for this journal recommendation, which is just choosing to trust where I am, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. It's kind of funny because what this seems to be saying, if we look at both of these quotes together, is that being the renunciate leads to seeing that you were never the renunciate. Why? Because the opposite of being the renunciate is listening to mind and believing mind and being caught up in mind, which is strengthening mind, which is complete ignorance. And we don't get to wisdom through ignorance. And true wisdom is seeing who we are. So, you know, sometimes when people listen to spiritual teachings, and I'll even say right now, especially spiritual teachings that are ahead of the step they're currently on right now, the ego can use those spiritual teachings that are ahead of where they are right now to cause them to not practice what they should be practicing right now. For example, you know, maybe what you should be practicing right now is being the renunciate. Letting go of thought. And in fact, the teachings of Inner Ramana, that's what that whole book is about. It's about being the renunciate. At the very end, it starts helping you to shift beyond the renunciate. But the entire book is about renunciating thought through surrender, through practice of the mantra, right? So maybe you're someone who really needs to be the renunciate right now. But then you hear a teaching that the renunciate is just a cartoon character, that you are not the renunciate, and the ego uses that to distort it, to then say, if you're trying to renunciate the mind, you are guilty because you're not even the renunciate. It always has to throw that little "you're guilty" in there. And so then here you are at the stage where you should be renunciating the mind, but now this message has been confused and you aren't, and the ego is able to keep you kind of stuck for a while with that confusion. So it's helpful to see that as we go through different stages, different teachings are most helpful for us now. At one stage, it's very, very helpful for me to be the renunciate, renunciating mind with practices like surrender, the mantra, self-inquiry. And then at another stage, it's time to see that you aren't and never have been the renunciate, that you are the untouched awareness that this whole story of renunciation is playing out in. And there is even a phase, which is the one I'm in now, where you're kind of back and forth. You're kind of like crossing over. And so at some points you can just see that, who you are, and you can just stay gently focused on that. And then at other times, you know, somehow you can't. And so you need to be practicing the renunciation again. I think this is why, one of the reasons why so many people say there's paradox on the spiritual path. Because we can't take something and say this is what's best for everyone right now. So one thing that we know for sure is that the mind blocks true wisdom. And therefore, every one of us is at one stage or another of letting go of mind, disbelieving mind, becoming detached from mind, or noticing, I am not mind. All of that is good. In whatever stage we're at, as long as we realize that mind is the obstacle, we're doing great. But whenever we think that my mind is right, that my mind is who I am, we're lost in ignorance. So if we can be clear on that, then this, and then just whatever stage we're at in this awakening process and do it to the best of our ability, we're doing great. And that's really all we need to know. So that kind of takes us back to this journal entry of other times I feel to trust my heart, stay in the moment, and let go of thinking now. All right, time for me to let go of the mic now. Thank you very much. I'll see you guys again at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the Daily Contemplation.